Sade, love is king. So, a document from the days of Alfred the Great is important for us here in 2009. Paul Wiltshire is with me again. We invited Paul back because we enjoyed the last talk he gave me on a bit of the old history of Nottingham. I think you're going to be enlightened in a few moments' time. But let me put red rag to a bull. Look, the Romans were here. Then we had the Dark Ages, and then William the Conqueror came. So what on earth would be interesting what happened during the Dark Ages, because it was dark.
It was, but of course that's the very period when our Anglo-Saxon background began. It's interesting that we're talking about English history today because, as we've just been discussing, it's the birthday of one of our sons, Winston Churchill. Nobody knew about Anglo-Saxon history, and particularly the language, more than Sir Winston. Because it was the richness and the rhythm of the language that Sir Winston Churchill used in his very, very famous speeches. And he was right to emphasise it because we're going to be talking today about the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles, which are a glorious surviving set of ancient manuscripts that are 1,100 years old. They talk about the very beginnings in those Dark Ages, you called it, when Anglo-Saxon history began.
But in those chronicles, we don't mention Nottingham, surely?
Oh, yes, they do. They're mentioned very, very frequently. You'll hear me later if we have time, John. And
we will have time after the news.
All right, yes. You'll hear me talk about entries on the year 867 AD and the first Viking raid on Nottingham when he took over a settlement occupied at that time by Snot. And then you'll hear me talking about AD 918 when King Edward, the son of Alfred the Great, came here and captured that site off them. And then you'll hear me talking about AD 1068, when William the Conqueror came in here.
So where these Anglo-Saxon chronicles, just briefly at the moment, where are they now? I mean, these
nine surviving sets. They are indeed. There are nine surviving sets. Some are just fragments, John, but some are literally hundreds of pages long. Seven of them are in the British Library. One is in the Bodleian Library, Oxford. And one is in Corpus Christi College, Cambridge. So that's where they are.
And you've seen them?
I've seen some of them. I haven't seen them all by any stretch of the imagination.
Were you in awe?
I just think they're such a national treasure. They're glorious. And it's us. And the key thing, John, in my view, is they're written in English at a time when we were under threat from Danish and Viking raiders, when the language of knowledge and documentation was Latin, and the man who kicked it off, probably Alfred the Great, he had the foresight to write to them in English. He gave the kickstart to the English language and the English people.
More from Paul Wiltshire in a moment. That'll be after the news. You've whetted my appetite beautifully, sir. We're heading towards the news with the Four Tops.
And when I see the sign that points one way, the lot we used to pass by.
Tops and Walk Away, Renee.
On 103.8, 95.5, digital radio and at bbc.co.uk/Nottingham. This is BBC Radio Nottingham.
It's 3 o'clock, I'm Kevin Stanley. A four-year-old boy has been killed by a dog at his home in Liverpool. Emergency services were called to the house in the Wavertree area just after midnight, but were unable to save him. A 63-year-old woman, thought to be a relative, was taken to hospital with arm injuries. People living there are shocked.
It just scares you, really. I mean, I've got a dog myself and I've got a dog, so that's four. It's just me feel physically sick.
Well, I'm a grandmother myself. It doesn't bear thinking about. You think your own children, if it happened to them, it's just doesn't bear thinking about. I don't know whose dog it was, but I can understand the grandmother like fighting, trying to get the dog off the child.
The government says the British military now has enough kit in Afghanistan to send in a further 500 troops. Gordon Brown's expected to confirm the deployment in the Commons within the next hour. The Conservative MP for Newark, Patrick Mercer, says extra troops should have been sent sooner.
Imagine that sort of excuse of the equipment not being ready, being provided to Winston Churchill during the Second World War. That's nonsense. These troops have been needed for a long time now. Actually, the peak of the fighting, generally speaking, occurs during the summer months. Now that winter's approaching, it is likely, I hope, to die down. Of course I support these troops. I just don't know why it's taken the government so long and why so few of them are going.
A woman from Mansfield says she may have to sell her home to fund her cancer treatment. Julie Butler's been taking Avastin for 2 years, and because it doesn't cure bowel cancer, the NHS won't pay for the drug. The Liberal Democrat leader Nick Clegg has announced how he'll shift taxes to the wealthy. Setting out his plans for the next election, he said he'd get rid of income tax for those earning less than £10,000 a year, and there'd be a so-called mansion tax on houses worth over £2 million. 1,400 motorists have been arrested in Nottinghamshire this year for drink driving or refusing a breath test. The figures have been released as police begin their festive campaign to stop drink or drug driving. Here's Chief Inspector Andy Charles.
We are still getting accidents, people still die on Nottinghamshire's roads as a result of drinking and driving. So the message is that, you know, if you're planning a journey this year, don't drink and don't drive. Plan out alcohol. That's the modern message, I think.
Two students from Nottingham Trent University have been selected to represent Great Britain at the Winter Olympics. Nick Buckland and Penny Coombs were picked for the Vancouver squad after coming second at the British Figure Skating Championships at the weekend. Nottinghamshire's weather mostly dry this afternoon, but breezy and cold. Highs of 6 Celsius, 43 Fahrenheit. A dry evening to come that's going to bring clearing skies and a widespread frost, though minus 3 Celsius, 26 Fahrenheit, and then sunny spells at the start of Tuesday, cloud with rain later and temperatures similar to today's. BBC News for Nottinghamshire. It's 3 minutes past three.
BBC Radio Nottingham. Travel.
Moving fine at the second on the roads across Nottinghamshire, I'm pleased to say. No major hassles so far for the M1, certainly just checking the Highways Agency cameras for you. It's moving fine in both directions, including through the ongoing roadworks between Junction 25 for the A52 and Nottingham and Junction 28 for the A38 and Alfreton. Also, Nottingham City Centre seems to be coping well. No major problems for Newark. Both Hatton and Kirkby and Ashfield are moving fine. Don't forget, through Whipple, though, those major roadworks continue on the A46 between Melton Road and Main Street. So between Liverpool and Farndon until Easter 2012. There are various carriageway closures and temporary lights with some work overnight also. Call them if your travel needs now on 011-59-34-3434. I'm Adam Murray and there'll be another travel update in half an hour.
BBC Radio Nottingham with John Holmes.
Dionne Warwick and Heartbreaker. It's 8 minutes past three. BBC Radio Notting with me, John Holmes, and my guest at the moment is Paul Wilshire. We're talking about the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles. Paul is a historian today, but in the old days he was a police officer and sportsman. What did you do as a sportsman?
Well, I started out as a race walker with Belgrave Harriers, and I also turned into a 400-metre runner, and then cross-country and all sorts of daft, silly things, really.
So you're a bit of a walker?
I was indeed, yeah.
Putting me to shame, as I've heard. We're not going to talk about that. I don't like being up, downstage,
long
upstage.
Time ago.
Right, let's go on to the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles then. Look, they have been so long branded the Dark Ages, I keep rubbing this into you. Where to begin? We've got Romans. We all know what the Romans did for us.
Yes.
Now, where do the Anglo-Saxons fit into all this? What happened?
OK, good question and easily answered. Towards the end of the 4th century, this country was very successful, potentially very wealthy. So tribes, and that's the right word, from Europe, began to migrate in small numbers to England, particularly via the east coast up the Humber, the Trent, and by the south coast up the Thames and in the port of Southampton. The Romans left in 410 AD, and that's the key, John, because typically when people talk about the Dark Ages, that's where they begin in their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I would differ from that, because when the Romans left, that left an enormous void, and it was filled by hordes of these tribes, but three in particular, the Jutes from modern-day Jutland, the Angles from Northern Europe, and the Saxons from what we now know as Germany. And they poured in by the tens of thousands. And they pushed the traditional Britons towards the west, where they eventually settled in Wales, Cornwall and the northwest. But the key is that having settled, they began to set up their own little areas under local chieftains. And interesting, around 600, I can't be any more precise than that, one particular Saxon chieftain called Snot, who you're familiar with, I'm sure,
yes, yeah.
Charming name, he took over this area. And he was no more than that. He was a local chieftain. And he set up Snotingerham, the homestead of Snot and his people, in the area roughly covered today by the lace market right out the window.
So as I look out this window here on my left-hand side,
you
over my shoulder...
You just saw some good people, yes. Yes.
That's roughly where St Mary's Church is?
That's right, roughly in that area.
Yeah, right,
yeah, roughly
on the hill.
In that area. And then I know you've got a nice image. Over the centuries, local chieftains came to the fore, and eventually we were left with a series of separate kingdoms. By around 800, that had evolved to separate kingdoms. The one we're interested in locally is Mercia, but the most successful and dominant historically was, of course, in the south, and that was Wessex. To the north, we had Northumbria. We also had in East Anglia the land of the East Angles, and there was also a separate kingdom of Kent at that time, the kings of the Kent. And what's significant for our purposes is that around 597, the Pope at that time, a man called Gregory the Great, he sent a mission to England to try and Christianise this group of barbarians, because that's what we were believed to be. And Augustine was frightened by what he heard as he reached these shores. He actually went back to Rome and said to Pope Gregory the Great, do you think this is such a good idea? Well, Pope Gregory the Great sent him back, and he Christianised this country from 597. About 597 AD, the first Christian king being King of the Kents via Canterbury Cathedral. Now, this is key here, because from that time, the Christian churches began to keep records, John, and they kept records of annual East dates, because Easter was a very important event.
Why? I mean, I understand, because for us, Easter is important because that's on Good Friday, Jesus dies on the cross, and on Easter Sunday, he rises again from the dead, which, if he doesn't rise from the dead, the Christian faith doesn't work.
Correct. Yeah.
So that's the reason it was important to us. Is there another
There was another reason, John. The second coming of Christ, the new millennium. Because by 597, they were beginning to look towards the new millennium. The people at that time genuinely believed that there was going to be a second coming. And it was so critical for them, because to them it gave them hope and it gave them relief from existence. It's difficult for us to imagine the terrible consequences of living at that time with plague, the Viking raids, violence, normal ailments that couldn't be cured at that time. So people looked out of these dark ages, as you said, to this new millennium and the coming of Christ. So the recording of Easter and the years, year on year, were vitally important. And these manuscripts were kept in all the churches and abbeys around England although it wasn't called England at that time.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, actually, this idea, because there you are, you're building up a little community, and you're all mates, and you've got a nice little community going all the time, apart from the fact you've got an intelligence. So if people die in front of you and they die long, lingering deaths, even if it's natural. But all the time, you never know when somebody's going to come around and beat you up and just wipe you out. Very funny.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You'll hear me, if we have time, you'll hear me talking from the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle itself, from the mouths of the people who lived through it. These were terrible times. Today, we often hear people say, these are violent times. They're not, John. They're sophisticated times in comparison to what our ancestors had to put up with.
Paul Wiltshire is my guest. More on the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles here on BBC Radio Nottingham in a moment. It's 14 minutes past three.
We'll do it all, everything, on our own. We don't need anything or if I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? I don't quite know how to say said too much, they're not enough. If I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? Forget what we're told. If I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? Forget what we're told before we get too old. Show me a just lay here. Would you lie with me and just forget the world?
Snow Patrol. Not quite at that situation, but it's going to be cold tonight and tomorrow morning. That's Chasing Cars. It's 18 minutes past three.
Francis Finn on BBC Radio Nottingham. They're not just guests.
Hi, Fran. Nice to see you again.
You're going to do our bathrooms over in a minute.
Yes. What a lot of people are having now to save space is rather than have...
Because it's a stupid thing to do.
They're also listeners.
I love the music on Radio Nottingham because it takes me back to when I was 25 years old. I love that. And I can think, oh, you remember the discos. I love listening to Fran. She sounds like a friend in your kitchen.
Francis Finn from 9. BBC Radio Nottingham.
Enjoy your afternoon with John Holmes on BBC Radio Nottingham.
BBC Radio Nottingham.
19 minutes past three, and Paul Wiltshire is still with me. We're talking about the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles. But at the moment, we've got these Easter table from the Annals in front of me. So when did the Annals become the Chronicles then?
9th century. And one of our greatest kings, he was King of Wessex at the time, Alfred the Great, he saw the potential, saw that they were being written in Latin, and asked himself, well, why don't we have them written in English? Because that's the everyday language of all the people who live here.
That's fantastic. And why that's a leap forward.
It is.
Because when you think the church insisted on the Bible being in Latin for donkey's years, and then if you translate it into English, you're burnt at the stake.
Yes, a classic man ahead of his time, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alfred saw the potential, and what he did was, at his court, probably Winchester, but we can't say that for certain, but it's likely at Winchester because that had the facilities and the organisation necessary. He gathered together all the academics, and he created on a core text from all the available sources. And he drew on the Bible, he drew on Roman documents, he drew on the Venerable Bede's History of England, which was written in English at that time, in Latin at that time. And he pulled it all together into one core text at Winchester, had it copied and sent all around the country to all the abbeys, minsters, cathedrals, then maintained them up to date. In one case, at Peterborough, right up to the 1154.
So even though obviously Alfred died, he's great, isn't he? Even when he died then, it was still maintained.
Yes, indeed. At different places. And they became known by the place where they were maintained. So hence, John, we end up with the Winchester manuscript, the Worcester manuscript, the Peterborough. 9 have survived of different lengths and quality. 7 are in the British Library. 1 at Corpus Christi College, Cambridge. And the last at the Bodleian Library in Oxford. And if you'd permit me, what I would like to do is to read to you from the mouths of the scribes themselves some of the annual entries that were written by these people at the time.
Go on, then.
Local.
Yeah.
Let's start with the year 867 or 868 AD, so we're talking nearly 1,200 years ago, and a scribe has written this. Here, the Viking raiding army went into Mercia to Nottingham and took winter quarters there, and did King Burdred, the king of Mercia, and his councillors, ask Æthelred, the king of Wessex, and his brother Alfred, come to help them fight against the raiding army, which travelled then to with the West Saxon army into Mercia as far as Nottingham, where they met the raiding army there in fortification and besieged it in there. Fortunately, no heavy fighting occurred, and the Mercians did make peace with the raiding army.
So the fortification, we're not talking about the castle, which is at the castle. We're talking about just over my left shoulder.
300 years before
where,
the castle
St. Mary's
was here.
Church is.
Yeah, before Mary's
roughly.
Church was here, yes,
yeah.
Roughly, yes,
right,
roughly
okay.
Speaking. And then, remarkably, if we can make a little leap forward to the year 922, we then find that Alfred the Great's son comes up here because he's heard about this little fortification up here. And this is what scribe of the day tells us, that in company with all of the Welsh and other men who would abide by the Lord, went there to Nottingham, where they did capture this stronghold and ordered it to be improved and occupied, both with Englishmen and with Danish. And all the people that were settled in the land of Mercia at Nottingham, both Danish and English, turned to him, meaning he got the local people in Nottingham to swear to King Edward. You see, so what he's done is he's taken over the fortification here in Nottingham and he's improved it. And we know from archaeological evidence, which I've got some information on here, that what they did was they improved the site by creating a very large-scale ditch and a rampart around that original settlement.
So isn't what they achieved in those days? Because in a sense, obviously used to the mobile phone. Even when I was a child, we were used to the telephone. So you could phone up London and say, things are going all right. Hello, Alfred. Things are not going too bad in Nottingham. But you'd actually have to leave your base to come up to here and create a base here. And that would be days away. And then you've got your days away from contact.
And this is why, in my opinion, Alfred the Great was such a magnificent Englishman, because what he did, he had the foresight to realise that. And that's why he wanted all these locally maintained manuscripts with all their little local variations, and they've been left to us. I think there's another glorious entry here that might interest you and the viewers, and that is we all know about 1066 and the Battle of Hastings.
We do.
We know that William the Conqueror came over. What is less well known, that his wife, Matilda, was a direct descendant of Alfred the Great, which I know we've mentioned before. But she didn't come over for a couple of years. And the reason is that William the Conqueror didn't feel the country was safe enough. But from the mouths of the people themselves, we now know, in the Peterborough version of the manuscript, that in fact she did come over at one stage, and then she stayed here. And there's a Nottingham connection.
Mm-hmm.
Because the entry from the mouth of the scribe themselves says this: "And here at this Easter, being 1068, the Lady Matilda came here to the land, and Archbishop Aldred consecrated her queen in Westminster on Whit Sunday. And it was then, when the king was formed, that the people in the north had gathered together and would stand against him if he came. He thus went to Nottingham, and he built a castle there, and so went to York, and there built two castles, and then into Lincoln and everywhere in that region." So we've got direct evidence from the mouths of the people themselves that in 1068, here comes William the Conqueror, and he starts work on the first church, John. Castle, I beg your pardon.
That's fantastic. I love all this stuff. You showed me one of the manuscripts which has part of it removed, the Worcester manuscript.
Yes.
this is censorship. I mean, this is. Things never change, do they?
Yes, it's a copy from the page itself, the Worcester manuscript, which is now in the British Library, and you can see in the page that right across the middle it's torn. At the top it talks about 1065, and then the middle section, which would have talked about the Battle of Hastings, it's actually been torn out by somebody unknown. And then at the bottom, as you can see, there's a scribbled entry trying to make good, talking about the appearance of Halley's Comet in 1066. In old English.
Well, in 1066, it wasn't very important, yeah, but we did see a comet. But there's no effort to make it match. That's what's so ridiculous.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful. Now, people are going to say to me, this is absolutely fascinating, this is our history, but is it written down anywhere, apart from it's in your head? And obviously in the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles, which I haven't got access to at the moment.
Well, I personally have written three books about different aspects of England.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to do personally is trying to introduce people in a gentle, non-detailed and not too deep a way about the gloriousness of our past.
Yeah.
I call mine Why England, Which England, Who's England, which is literally about the things, the people and the places that shaped us. What I'm trying to do now is to get onto the presentation circuit to talk in the way that we're talking now, John.
Well, it's riveting.
Well, I think it is. I think our past is glorious. We've certainly got the best written history in the world. And perhaps next time, if I get the opportunity, what I would like to do is talk about the Doomsday Book, which is the oldest written survey of any country in the world. And that's just glorious in itself.
Paul will do the Doomsday Book next.
Yeah.
Have a word with Michaela, my producer, and we'll sort the date out. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for your time. And I'm sorry to hear about your friend, John.
That's all right, don't worry. No, it'll all be all sorted out, don't worry. BBC Radio Nottingham, 27 minutes past. News coming up in a few moments' time, and then we'll be talking about the University of the Third Age. And then Philip Jackson, local actor, talks about playing the part of Harold Wilson.
Childhood living. Things that you